Welcome to LOA Today. Walt Thiessen and Life Coach David Bartke here. Today is Sunday, January 7th, 2018. Happy New Year, everybody. 11 a.m. Eastern Time with your daily dose of happy. And, of course, this is the podcast for the Thursday 7 p.m. show on PRN. So this is like our big one every week. And, David, I hope you're feeling better. I know you've been under the weather for a bit, but based on our pre-call, I'd say you're sounding a whole lot better.
Yes. Hey, Walt, thank you so much for asking. I feel much better today. There's still a little bit of a cough every once in a while, but thank goodness, much better.
All right.
Yes.
Beat
Although
it.
It's freezing outside, but whatever.
I know. Oh, my goodness. I woke up this morning, looked at the thermometer, it said -8. I said, oh, we're not opening the door for a while. This is too cold. I mean, for Connecticut, that's pretty cold. It doesn't normally get that cold here. So, yeah, we're in a bit of a cold snap, but the good news is that even without law of attraction, the weather people are reporting that the temperature is going to start going up over the next few days. In fact, we could even hit the 40s, so it's going to be a pretty big jump. But that's okay. I like that because I haven't been out to do my walking in a while, and I really miss it. So I'm looking forward to the warm
weather. Yes. Yes, for sure. So what winds have you had lately?
Oh, well, I guess the biggest wins have to do with the progress of the podcast, actually. You may not have seen it, but we have our little private group for the co-hosts there on Facebook, and I posted there a little graph showing what our progress is, and it's just astonishing. The graph points straight up. It's just growing like crazy. And the only thing that is kind of holding us back a little bit, if you can call it holding it back with that kind of a graph, is that there just simply aren't a lot of people who know about it yet, which is one reason we're pursuing a project. In fact, I think I'll announce what the project is. We're going to publish a book, not only amongst the co-author, the co-hosts of the show, but we're also going to invite in a bunch of other life coaches from around the country and around the world to participate. And the book is basically going to be a chicken soup for the soul, but for the law of attraction soul. So it's going to be about, you know, LOA manifesting stories. And it should be really good. Actually, our goal is very ambitious and very reachable, it turns out. We are going to turn it into a bestseller. And we're going to do it on Amazon. Amazon has a number of different categories that are very much within our reach. And the way we're going to pull it off is we're going to just get all the authors involved, because when all the authors are promoting to their own, you know, circles of people, hey, here's what I'm doing, take a look at my book, that's going to give us a huge promotional push. So we're going to shoot right to the top, and it's going to be fun. And I hope that listeners, you know, follow along and maybe even check out the book when it's out. We're going to try to make it as low cost as we can. We're not trying to make money off the book. Really, we're just trying to promote the show. But it's going to be fun, David.
Yeah, and I'm sure there's going to be a lot of great, interesting stories in there.
And we're going to be ambitious about it. We're going to try to get this book published by February, which is very ambitious, and it's going to take quite a bit of work to do it. I have been through the process before, so I have other co-hosts who are involved in the project, so it's not like it's new to us. But it's an ambitious thing to try to get it done that quickly. But I think it can be done, so it's going to be fun.
Sounds good.
How about you? Any
Sounds
wins for you?
Good. Yeah, well, one of the ones I think you'll appreciate, I was doing one of my, you know, I always offer the free first mini phone coaching sessions.
Right.
And the person I was talking to has only been listening to Abraham Hicks and to our show.
Oh, really? No kidding. Fantastic.
So we're in good company. That's what she's enjoying. So
yeah.
I thought, wow, well, that's great. Someone, you know, people are listening to Abraham and us.
Yeah, putting us in the same category as them, that's a good boost. I like that. Let's do that some more.
I know. And, you know, even more importantly than that nice news is that it's been helping her a lot.
Fantastic.
Information, and she says she really likes listening to us, and it inspires her, and she likes when we have our little kind of fun sense of humor moments. And
good. Well,
yeah. Hey. So I thought that was great.
That's fantastic.
To hear that, you know, not only are we enjoying doing it, but it is helping people.
We've had a few people give us some feedback lately. We had one person who actually posted a comment on the homepage of the site, which is the first time, believe it or not, that that's happened, but really very complimentary, and she was loving the show and so forth. And there was somebody else who posted in a Facebook group how much they were enjoying the show, and just raving about how she kept playing episode after episode, and everyone was even just as good as the last one, and she just couldn't wait to hear the next one. And like, whoa, this is good. This is really good stuff. So, it matches our experience. I mean, when I look at the statistics, the analytics for, you know, people who are listening, you know what the biggest thing that stands out to me, even bigger than that upward curve I was talking about? A year ago, the average unique listener who listened to the podcast would listen to an average of 4, maybe 5 podcasts. Last month, that number increased to 22. So people are listening like crazy. On top of that, I can when somebody downloads a show, you don't actually know for sure that they listened. But there's one way you can kind of check it just to see, you know, what's the likelihood that they're listening. And that is to compare bandwidth. Bandwidth measures how big the files are and how much of the file gets downloaded. And when I compare the total bandwidth for the site to the number of downloads and the size of the downloads on average, and they're usually about 28 megabytes, so it gives me a very easy way to calculate, I find that on average, last month, 90% of the people downloaded listened to the entire program, or at least downloaded the entire program. And this month, it's 94%, so it's actually increasing. So people are enjoying it, and that's great. We love it. It's wonderful. So, yeah, lots of good news going on.
Yes, and I would say another win, it wasn't a personal win, but it's still a win, is one of my clients, he said that before the Law of Attraction coaching and before he really knew about Law of Attraction, his vibration was so low, he just kind of went through each day kind of blah, you know, not that excited to get out of bed, just kind of blah. And since he's been doing the coaching and learning about Law of Attraction and some of the basics and what to do and vibration, and since he's been taking deliberate action, his whole daily life has improved so much.
Like, really?
He now looks forward to getting out of bed, and he's enjoying his days more than ever. And that's such a great win, that just from, you know, learning about Law of Attraction and learning some processes and why they're important and vibration and, you know, becoming more of a deliberate creator, he is experiencing such an improved life. And that's, I mean, come on, that's amazing.
That's fantastic. Actually, that's something that Abraham Hicks doesn't get enough credit for, because everybody listens to Abraham because they're trying to learn how to manifest stuff, right?
Yeah.
But in fact, Abraham points out that, sure, it's great to manifest stuff, but the objects that we're trying to manifest aren't really the important thing. The important thing is experiencing joy in life, because that's the real success. So kudos to him. He's experiencing the real success, the one that matters more than all the rest. And, oh, by the way, all of a sudden stuff is going to start manifesting, too, in ways that he didn't expect.
That's right.
That's like the benefit.
That's right, because when you start feeling better, you're going to start attracting experiences that support you feeling better.
That's right. Oh, yeah, and in a big way. In fact, in unexpected ways. In fact, serendipitous ways. In fact, oh, my God, what's going on here?
So that's an amazing win, because I just love hearing that. And I know you've experienced that in your life. I've experienced that in my life, with just being more deliberate in controlling how we feel. And it makes such an amazing difference.
And it's fun. I mean, it's really fun. You know, I mean,
It's fun because it feels better.
It does feel better. Yeah, it's more fun than almost going off and doing something fun, although that's certainly part of it. Because it just keeps lasting. You know, it just carries on day to day to day. It's like, whoa, this is good, you know? That's the best.
Like, as you've experienced, when we learn how to keep ourselves feeling good within, not relying on circumstances, it's a huge positive thing.
It really is, no doubt about it. Now, this also does tie in with the topic for today, because we have this week plus 2 more weeks left, and then we have finished Ask and It Is Given by Abraham Hicks. We're almost done, David.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
We're on chapter 20. Now, chapter 20 has a really interesting title. It's one that when I first read it, I said, wow, I'm glad that they included a title like that, because it's something that a lot of people, I think, really need to hear. The title of chapter 20 is Trying to Hinder Another's Freedom Always Costs You Your Freedom, which is not a message we hear very often. But boy, oh boy, is it true. And it's true in ways that you don't really expect. I mean, it almost sounds like they're saying, if you're going to try to gang up on somebody you know, politically, and or you know, your group is going to outvote their group, and you're hindering their freedom. Well, that's true, but that's not what the chapter is directly addressing. What it's directly addressing is like the person to person kind of thing, you know, the individual experience kind of thing, and the way it addresses it, it almost comes out of left field. It kind of catches you by surprise, and after you finish the chapter, you say, "Whoa, so that's what it really means to try to hinder another's freedom, and that's what it means when it says it will cost me my freedom." It's like totally unexpected when you hear it. So,
well, let's hear some of that.
Well, let's go for it. So, okay, here we go. First chapter, or the first paragraph, rather. Yes, when you ask, it is always given, but you must be in vibrational harmony with what you are asking for before you can let it into your experience. And the reason why so many people do not remember or believe that all that they are asking for is being answered is because they are not consciously aware of what they are doing vibrationally. And boy, is that true. That's true for everybody, you know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They are not making the conscious connection between their thoughts, the subsequent feelings those thoughts evoke, and the manifestations that are occurring. And without that conscious connection, you cannot know where you are in relationship to that which you desire. When you know that you want something, and you notice you do not have it, you assume that there is something outside of yourself that is keeping it from you. But that is never true. Boy, I mean, how often do we come to that conclusion, you know?
Yeah, that's for sure.
It's crazy, but it's true. The only thing that ever prevents you receiving something that you desire... Whoops, I just hit the wrong button. Hold on a second.
Okay, all right.
Yes, the only thing that ever prevents you from receiving something that you desire is that your habit of thought is different from your desire. And once you are aware of the power of your thoughts and of your ability to allow in the things that you desire, then you have creative control of your experience. But if you are predominantly focused upon the results of your focused thoughts rather than feeling your way within your thoughts, it is easy to lose your way. Now, that's something we've talked about a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so, next subhead. Every reality has been focused by someone into being. Some people will argue, but Abraham, I'm only telling you what is. I'm only facing the reality of the situation. And we say that you are taught to face reality before you knew you were creating reality. Do not face reality unless it is a reality you want to create. For any reality only exists because someone has focused it into being. And someone will say, but this is a true thing, and therefore it deserves my attention. And we say that you make whatever you give your attention to your truth. And so it is extremely beneficial for you to focus primarily on the way you feel while giving only scant attention to the manifestations as they are unfolding. For whenever you are giving your primary attention to things as they are, you are hindering the expansion of what is. Now we're starting to touch on what they were talking about, how trying to focus on controlling others, so to speak, actually inhibits your own ability to control yourself. And it doesn't really say it yet, but you can see where it's kind of pointing in that direction, you know?
Yeah, and it's interesting too, and I know we've talked about it before, but it's worth talking about it again, how it is easier to focus on what is because that's what we're experiencing. And it's a little confusing sometimes to people to think, well, but this is what's happening, but this is what's happening. And I'm like, I know that's what's happening, but if it's not what you want to have happen, you got to get your focus off that and focus and refocus on what you want, on what you want, so that the what we want becomes the what is.
And it's so tempting to focus on what's happening, because it's what's happening. It's what we see.
If that's what we're experiencing.
Yeah. I mean, it's almost hard not to. So what's the secret then? How do you do it? Right.
You got to ask yourself, well, what do I want? What is of whatever's going on right now is not what I want. What do I want?
And you also have to
deliberately refocus on what you want to have happen, on what you want.
And that's the difference. It's the commitment. You have to actually commit to focusing on other stuff than what you're experiencing, which takes some discipline to do that. It takes you have to really focus.
And depending on what it is, like, it doesn't mean you ignore what is, because sometimes you have to handle certain things of what is. It just means you don't want that to be your main focus.
Right. Exactly.
You still want to keep your focus on what you want, how you want it to be.
Now, the next paragraphs start to zero in a little bit more on this whole thing about trying to inhibit other people's freedom. And it does it in a very interesting way. You have to kind of watch for it because it kind of sneaks up on you. It says, all those statistics that are gathered about your own experiences and about others are only about how somebody has already flowed energy. They are not about any hard and fast now reality. Okay, now that was a direction you didn't really see coming, was it?
No. No.
So, continuing that, within your current society, there are many who gather the statistics of human experience. They spend lifetimes comparing experiences and categorizing them as appropriate or inappropriate, right or wrong. They weigh the pros and the cons and the pluses and the minuses of topic after topic. But they seldom realize that their vibrational offerings are not serving them. They have no sense of their own power because they are flowing their energy in opposite directions. Their lives have become more about labeling the behavior or experiences of those with whom they share their planet than about their own creating. This points to something really interesting. So much of what we do with statistics is about trying to control the freedom of others. We don't think about it that way, do we?
No, not really. I haven't. No.
But isn't that what it's about? I mean, we're always trying to find what the average is, right?
Yeah.
We're trying to use this stuff to create a uniform human experience, which is actually the last thing that we want. When you think about it, it would be a very boring existence if we did that. But that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to make everybody think a certain way. We're trying to make people act a certain way. We're trying to make if I show you the right statistics, you will change your behavior to the way I want you to behave. And when you say it that way, you realize, well, that doesn't make any sense. So it's a very different way of looking at things. So, all right, continuing with what they're writing here. And so these people find themselves in a very uncomfortable position as they come to believe that their happiness or well-being depends upon the behavior of others. They point to people, behaviors, or beliefs and call them inappropriate, saying no to them without realizing they are including in their experience the vibration of the very thing they do not want. And so, without the knowledge of how it is that those unwanted things are making their way into their experience, they become increasingly guarded and fearful. Is there a better description of what politics is all about? I'm serious. Is there one?
Yeah. So Abraham's saying, and by focusing on that, they're inviting it into their reality, even though it's not what they want to bring into the reality.
That's right. Yep. Which is pretty self-defeating.
Yes, which goes back to another thing that you and I have talked about, which is also very interesting, that we're always saying yes to everything we're focusing on.
That's right, yeah. Yeah, exactly. And
that's something big to get.
And by the way, this isn't just politics. This is anything where people try to use statistics to prove something to somebody else.
Yes.
So, science. This is a big commentary on science, isn't it? Because so much about science is trying to use my statistical study to prove to you that my way of thinking about this particular aspect of science is better than your way.
Mm-hmm.
And you realize, well, wait a minute, there's a flaw in here somewhere. Okay, so continuing with what they have to say. Unwanted things cannot jump into your experience uninvited. That sounds obvious on the face of it. Right? So why do they bring it up? Well, you have to read it to find out. It says, freedom from the fear of unwanted experiences will never be achieved by trying to control the behavior or desires of others. Your freedom can only be allowed by adjusting your own vibrational point of attraction. Okay, so now we're getting a sense of what they're talking about. Unwanted things cannot jump into your experience uninvited. Well, that ties into people trying to convince other people to live their own way. Well, if it's unwanted, it's not going to work. If it's not part of your vibration, it's not going to come in. Right?
Yes.
Okay. Yes. So without a knowledge of the law of attraction and without a conscious awareness of what you are doing with your own vibrational point of attraction, it is understandable why you would attempt to control the circumstances that surround you. But you cannot control the many circumstances that surround you. However, once you learn about the law of attraction and once you are aware of the way your thoughts feel, you will never again feel fear about unwanted things jumping into your experience. You will understand that nothing can jump into your experience without your invitation. Since there is no assertion in this attraction-based universe, I underline that, since there is no assertion in this attraction-based universe, if you do not achieve vibrational harmony with it, it cannot come to you. And unless you do achieve vibrational harmony with it, it cannot come to you. There is no assertion in this attraction-based universe. What a fascinating concept.
Wow.
How much of what we think about and do and act upon is based on the idea of asserting.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So how would you explain, like, someone who gets into a car accident? Would you say that they created that because they were thinking about it, or what would you say?
Well, taking from what Abraham just wrote and said here, if you do not achieve vibrational harmony with it, it cannot come to you. Unless you do achieve mm-hmm. vibrational harmony with it, it cannot come to you. So if it actually came to you, you achieve vibrational harmony with it.
Right. I don't know, people don't want to hear that.
No, I know they don't want to hear that. I didn't want to hear it.
Oh, but I created that.
The first time I read this stuff, I didn't want to hear it. Because that meant, hey, I am in complete control. Which is kind of ironic. Yeah. We want the control, but we don't want it.
Yes. And, you know, it's interesting because one time I was at a holistic expo, and there was someone doing tarot cards, and she did my tarot cards, and she also claimed she was part psychic as well.
Okay.
And she told me, you're going to love this, she said, oh, this was like a year ago, she goes, oh, be careful in August. You're going to get into a car accident in August.
Oh, dear.
Could you imagine that? Someone telling you? I left that booth thinking, this is what I paid money for?
Yeah, right.
And I thought to myself, you know what? No, I am going to be perfectly safe and perfectly fine, and she can just go blow bubbles because I don't believe that. And sure enough, August came and went, and I was totally fine. But I thought to myself, well, thank God I know about law of attraction, because I could see how someone else would, like, kind of create that then. If they believed that what that person said,
oh, yeah,
they would be walking around thinking, oh, my God, I'm going to get into a car accident in August. And chances are they probably would have.
It could definitely suck you in. And you're right, that is the big risk there. You don't really want... It's also true in LOA circles. I've seen this a lot on the Facebook groups. There are a lot of people, and clearly there are people who are relatively new to LOA and they're still trying to feel their way. So I'm not saying this to be critical of them. I'm just observing the fact that so many people who are trying to learn LOA and other things as well will put all of their life judgments into the hands of others in order to try to get there. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's actually probably a risk you run into as a coach, because probably the first thing that many people want to do when they're talking to you as a coach is they want you to fix their problem for them. Isn't that true?
Well, they want to know how. I mean, if anyone ever suggested that, I would always turn it around that they have to. That's something you have to do within yourself. Like,
right.
I can.
Exactly.
That's that old saying, you could lead a horse to water, but you can't make it drink. Like,
That's right.
Teach someone the most amazing processes and the most amazing information.
But they got
to
do it.
But they have to practice it, and they have to click with it and do it within themselves.
And yet so many people approach the law of attraction as if they're helpless victims who can't do it themselves. You know, so you even see it in their questions. Their questions are, they learn that it doesn't really pay to ask the question in a way that makes it look like they're setting themselves up to be victims. So they try to reframe it and reword it to make it sound more politically correct, you know. But you can tell. You just know they are professional victims, and they're going to be victims, and they want you to solve their problem, you know. No, it doesn't work that way.
Yeah. But have you ever been to, like, a psychic where they told you something like
that? Oh, yeah.
Not really.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I've had a number of psychic readings, many of which, I would say even most of which, did not come out accurately at all.
Right.
I had
I thought, you know, it's great to go to a psychic, and of course, you know, there's legit ones and not legit ones. But for myself, I thought, you know what? I'm a deliberate creator. I'm just going to create what I want. I don't need someone to tell me.
Well, that's just it.
That's going to happen.
When I say that it didn't come out right, I mean literally that. I mean, what they were projecting didn't match up with what I was projecting. And the good news is, where my life is concerned, what I project wins. Just as with you and your life and anybody else with their lives. Anything that you decide to project wins out over anything that the psychic tells you.
Yeah.
And indeed, the best psychics will tell you that. The best psychics are the honest ones. The best ones are usually the ones who don't charge money for it. But they're the ones who will tell you that, you know, this is not me telling you how your life is going to be. This is me telling you what I'm getting from the other side. And it's just right. based on where you are right now. You can change directions anytime you want to, and then all of a sudden all these, you know, these projections kind of disappear into nothingness.
Yeah.
That's what the honest one's saying.
And I also personally have a very strong intuition.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't know if I would call it psychic, but I have a very strong intuition.
Okay.
And sometimes, you know, a client will, like, say someone wants to attract a relationship, or maybe they're with someone, they're not sure how it's going to go, and they're like, well, what's the feeling you get? Do you think it's going to work out, or do you think I'll meet someone? And it's always like, you're the one who controls that.
Mm-hmm.
Not me. Even That's if I right. was getting a feeling, I would still just tell them, what you're focusing on and how you're thinking about it is going to control it. So it's interesting.
It is interesting. What a lot of this is, it's about people who long ago gave up their own control, who are trying to scramble their way back. And, of course, in the early mm-hmm. stages, you scramble your way back to doing what you've known how to do all along, which is to give up control. But what you're really trying to learn, and what you are learning when you're trying to do deliberate creation, is you're trying to learn how to take that control back. And it takes time. I mean,
exactly.
When you've been in a place where you've been giving up control constantly, it's not going to be something you're going to just jump right into and say, okay, I'm in control now. I'm done. You know, no more growth uh-huh. needed. No, it's not the way it works. In fact, that also ties into what they were saying in this chapter. They said, unwanted things cannot jump into your experience uninvited. Well, at the moment, if you are in a space of being a victim, in a sense,
yeah.
being in total control is unwanted at that point. Otherwise, you wouldn't be in that space. So that's why you can't just jump
right.
there. It's not, you can't just, you know, I'm there, done. You have to move there one step at a time, gradually,
yeah.
you know, through
and I also think
steps.
I also think there's potential also for a time delay. Like, maybe there was a day when you're, like, in a very low vibration, you're feeling negative, and you're worried about something, and then, like, a week later, it manifests.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it doesn't mean it's going to happen that day. You just never know.
Right. Yep. And the speed is pretty much, as far as I can tell, you tell me if you think differently, but the speed seems to be tied directly to how much resistance you have.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the more resistance mm-hmm. you have, the longer it's going to take, the less resistance you have, or if you have no resistance, it can show up, you know, almost instantaneously.
Yeah, because I've experienced some people said, like, something quote bad happened for them on a particular day, and they're like, why did that happen? I felt like I was in such a high vibration that day.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, well, how were you the day before that? And then they're like, oh, I see. Like, it's not always the day that something happens that's what you're attracting to that particular day.
Well, plus it's important to remember, there are none of us that I know of who are alive today who have purity of thought. We aim for
mm-hmm.
that. You know, but even when we're feeling good, there's always some stuff that goes on. You know, so what we're aiming for is not perfection. We're aiming for improvement on a day-to-day basis, right? If we aim for perfection, we'd be disappointed every single day. But by aiming for improvement, we get ourselves into more and more and more time where we're in that good vibrational state. Doesn't mean that the other stuff doesn't happen. Doesn't mean that we're never feeling bad, that we're never not feeling good, that we're never,
mm-hmm.
you know, of course not. You know, that stuff happens. And it can even happen almost simultaneously. Not simultaneously. It can't actually happen simultaneously, but almost simultaneously it can. So that even when you're in a good state, you can kind of shift for a moment to a feeling of doubt or thought about something that isn't going to work out or something like that, and then you can snap yourself back, you know? Which means most of the stuff that's going to happen, when you're in that kind of place where most of the time you're feeling good, most of the stuff that's going to happen is going to be good.
Yes, but what you said is key, though, is that taking action to snap back to feeling good.
Yes.
Like, it's not that we're never not going to feel good, but are you keeping yourself there, or are you doing something to get back to feeling better?
That's right, because what we're really dealing with is the resistance. And they actually talk about the resistance in the next section of this chapter.
Let's hear them.
Yeah, the chapter the subsection of the chapter is called, Was It Your Speed or Was It the Tree? If you were driving your vehicle at 100 miles per hour and you hit a tree, you would experience a very big crash. Yeah, you'd probably be dead, too. However, if you were to hit the same tree while your vehicle was traveling at just 5 miles per hour, the outcome would be considerably different. Yeah, I would say so. See the speed of your vehicle like the power of your desire. In other words, the more you want something, or the longer you have been focusing upon your desire, the faster the energy moves. The tree, in our analogy, represents the resistance or the contradictory thoughts that may be present. So that's like directly what we're talking about right there.
Yeah.
And they agree. It's not pleasant to run into trees, and it is also not pleasant to hold powerful desires in the midst of great resistance. Some try to remedy the imbalance by slowing down their vehicle. In other words, they deny their desire or they try to release it. And sometimes with great effort, they are able to diffuse the power of their desire to some degree. But by far the better remedy would be to reduce your level of resistance. Your desire is the natural result of the contrast in which you are focused. The entire universe exists to inspire the next new desire. And so if you are trying to avoid your own desire, you are attempting to move contrary to universal forces. And even if you are able, even if you are able to suppress a desire here and there, more desires are continually evolving within you, for you have come forth into this body and into this wonderful contrasting environment with a clear intention of focusing the energy that creates worlds through the powerfully focused lens of your perspective. And so nothing in all of the universe is more natural than your continuing desire. It's a really good point. I mean, you really can't run away from desire. If you try to, you're actually harming yourself in a sense. You're holding yourself back. Not really harm, perhaps, but holding yourself back. You're setting yourself up for the 5-mile-per-hour collision instead of the 100-mile-per-hour collision. When what you really should be setting yourself up for is a nice, clean, clear journey.
Yes. I think that's what Abraham means, too, when Esther says, we never get it done. We never get it wrong, we never get it done.
That's right.
Because there's always another, you know, there's always another desire around the corner, or there's always something else you want.
So,
like I've noticed when there is something I manifest that I've wanted, it doesn't take that long before my mind comes up with something else I want.
That's like, true.
I don't think that ever stops.
I don't think it does either. Yeah. Now, there's also the other piece of it, which they kind of touched on there, which is you want to get rid of your resistance. Well, okay, if you can't get rid of your resistance by reducing the speed, so to speak, then what can you do? And two subsections later, they answer that question. The subhead says, in your appreciation, you offer no resistance. Remember, you are an extension of source energy, and when you are allowing your full connection to your source, you feel good, and to the degree that you will disallow your connection, you feel less good. You are pure, positive energy. You are love. You expect good things. You respect and love yourself. You respect and love others, and you are a natural-born appreciator. Appreciation and self-love are the most important aspects you could ever nurture. Appreciation of others and the appreciation of yourself are the closest vibrational matches to source energy of anything we have ever witnessed anywhere in the universe. They've got that in italics.
That's big. Wait, appreciation of others and appreciation of yourself.
Yeah.
It is the
closest vibrational matches to source energy of anything we have ever witnessed anywhere in this universe.
Wow.
Yeah. And they go on to say, whenever you have focused upon something you appreciate, since that current choice of thought is so similar to who you really are as source energy, there is no contradiction in your energy. You are, in your moment of appreciation, offering no resistance to who you are. So your resulting emotional indication is one of love, joy, or the feeling of appreciation, and you feel very good. But if you criticize someone or even find fault with yourself, your resulting feeling would not feel good because the vibration of this thought of criticism is so very different from that of your source. In other words, because you have chosen a thought that does not match who you really are, you can, in this moment, feel the discord of your choice through your emotions. And they offer a contrast as an example between, say, your grandmother and a teacher. If your grandmother, who adores and appreciates you, tells you how wonderful you are, the reason those words feel so good is because they cause you to focus in a way that connects you with who you really are. But if a teacher or an acquaintance chastises you for some action you have offered, you feel bad because you now have been influenced to a thought that does not match who you really are. So they conclude your emotions let you know in every moment whether you are allowing your connection to who you are or are not. And when you allow your connection, you thrive. When you do not allow your connection, you do not thrive. So there it is.
Yes. Can I tell you something I appreciate?
And sure.
You know how you and I always talk about food?
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. The other day, I was with my mom, and we were at some restaurant that was famous for making shakes and malts.
Okay.
You know, malts.
Yep.
And, you know, my mom and I are always both, you know, trying to be very mindful of how we eat, and we're always trying to lose that same 10 pounds.
So you probably don't do shakes and malts too often.
No, but we were there, and I'm like, I kind of like, you know, look both ways to make sure no one was listening. I'm like, I want to share a malt. So she like nods her head, yes, so whatever. So we ordered, we told the waitress, we're going to share a vanilla malt because that's like both of our favorite things.
Okay.
And, you know, there's malts and there's malts. So they bought over the shared malt, which, by the way, they might as well have both been like their own malts because they were so big. Even sharing it was big. We were like, what? Like, oh, there was extra, so we just gave you the extra. Like, that wasn't the point. We just bought a half. We didn't want the calories of a whole one. So anyway, so I took a sip, and while I have to tell you, that was the best malt I ever had. I was like, wow, that just raised my vibration huge. I mean, whoo, like we were talking about foods that raise your vibration.
Oh, yeah. Well, that one apparently went through the roof.
I appreciated how amazing that vanilla malt was. It was just like, wow, this is just like a sip of heaven. Every sip was just like,
and I'm guessing from what you're saying, it wasn't just the sugar.
No, it was just the flavor of the vanilla with the malt flavor and the way they combined it. And I was just like, and you know what? I hate to admit it, but I drank the whole thing. Because when it first came, of course, I told myself in my own mind, I'm like, oh, I'm just going to have half of it. Because they gave us too much, like I said.
Yeah.
But as the meal went on, I noticed like it was slowly going down and going down. And by the end of the meal, it was gone. I'm like, well, I just have to not have anything high calorie the rest of the day. But it was really good. I just had to report that because I know we were sharing foods that are vibration raising.
So. Apparently, that one went through the roof.
but I'm saying I also appreciated that I did. I thought, you know what? I'm so thankful and appreciative that I can sit here and have this amazing beverage.
Like, that's nice.
Just in that moment, just like, you know, feeling so good about it.
That's
so,
really nice. That's great. I'm glad you had the experience. That's good.
See what a vanilla malt can do?
I guess so, apparently. You know,
did you have any vibration-raising foods the last week?
This past week? Oh, we have so many good meals, it's hard for me to pick one out. No, seriously, because Louise is a good cook. So, I mean, virtually everything we eat is good.
But was there anything in particular you were like, wow?
Let's see. Was there anything like that? I mean, it was all so good. There was one day we had some steak that was delicious.
Why were they good? Just the way they were seasoned, or?
Well, partly that, because we do a good job seasoning them, but I believe it was also, there's like a piece of the tenderloin that doesn't normally get bought by the tenderloin aficionado, so you can usually get it a lot cheaper, and so she got a couple of those.
Oh.
It was just as good as having the tenderloin. It was really good. It was just tender and juicy and you know, highly flavorful. That's always a big thing for her, is how flavorful any food is, and this was really flavorful.
Yeah.
So,
yes.
But that's the closest I can think of. But I mean, that's the thing. When you have so many good things, how do you pick, right?
Yes. Well, every once in a while, there's that thing that's like, wow, this is amazing.
Yeah, I can't point to anything like that really happened this week, but it didn't need to because I was just enjoying what we had. It was good.
Yes.
Now, interesting.
Anyway, sorry to divert.
That's fine.
A little bit, but I just want.
That's fine.
I remember to tell you about that vanilla malt. It was amazing.
It kind of ties into the next section because they were talking, of course, about the importance of appreciating yourself and appreciating others, and that's the highest thing you can do, the closest to pure source energy that you can do. The next subhead talks about a criticism that people raise about that, which is. The subhead says, you must be selfish enough to align with well-being. And they write, well, now occasionally someone will accuse us of teaching selfishness. And we agree. Indeed, we do teach selfishness. For if you are not selfish enough to deliberately align with the energy of your source, you have nothing to give anyway. Now, that flies in the face of a lot we're taught. Because we're taught about the value and the virtue of selflessness, aren't we?
Usually people use the word, oh, you're so self, like they use selfish in more of a negative way.
It's a negative, right.
But it really isn't.
It's a rebuff or a reproof, like, what's wrong with you? Yeah.
Right.
And interestingly enough, this is something that it doesn't show up in this chapter directly, but I remember hearing it in one of the Abraham talks. And in the talk, Abraham points out, did you ever notice that the people who accuse you of selfishness are themselves behaving selfishly? Because what they're really saying is...
Right, because they want you to do what they want you to do.
Well, more precisely, they are saying that they cannot be happy unless you behave the way they want you to behave. Mm. So if you aren't behaving the way they want you to behave so that they can be happy, you are the one who's selfish. I mean, that's ridiculous.
Yeah. Of course.
But that's what it is. That's what it all amounts to. Someone who says that you're selfish is invariably somebody who is not only failing to recognize their own selfishness, but they're blaming you for the fact that they can't make themselves happy.
Mm-hmm.
It's just crazy. But it shows just how much they don't understand the law of attraction, too. So, so we're doing a public service by educating people about the law of attraction so that there will be fewer people who will say, you're so selfish.
Right, because like you said, when they're saying that, they're really saying, you're not doing what I think you should do.
And by the way, remember what the title was about. The title was about, you can't take away the freedom of others without taking away your own freedom. Which is exactly what somebody who accused somebody else of selfishness is doing. They are trying to take away the freedom of others, and in the process, they're undermining their own freedom.
Mm-hmm.
And I bet you they don't think about it that way, but that's what they're doing.
I'm sure they don't.
Now, some worry, it says, if I selfishly achieve what I want, wouldn't I be unfairly taking it from others? But that concern is based on the misconception there is a limit of available abundance. They worry that if they take too much of the pie, others will be left with nothing, while in reality, the pie expands in proportion to the vibrational requests of all of you. Now, that's also a tough concept.
Mm-hmm.
That's a concept that people struggle with. Because that's what lack is all about, right?
There's no limit. Yeah, why are we putting limits on things?
And yet that's what we do. People, I mean, I'm guilty of it. You probably have too. I mean, just how many of us focus on the lack? We assume, well, there just isn't enough, right? And I will never get enough. And because I will never get enough, sure enough, I never get enough.
Right. There's that saying, you know, you could attract a castle or a button. What are you focusing on, the castle or the button? And most people are focusing on the button, not the castle. Because they think it's out of their reach. That's another limit. Like, oh, how can I... That's too much. How can I attract that?
So what do you tell somebody who's focused on lack? How do you break them of that habit?
Well, I like to do... have them make a list of if they had, like, an unlimited amount of money... Like, what would you buy? And sometimes at first, people keep themselves within a certain range. And then I'm like, well, no, but then I remind them, I'm saying an unlimited amount of money. What's something you think would cost so much that you couldn't even have access to? And then they start coming up with more of those things. And then after we do that for a while, they start realizing, like, wow, yeah, I really saw how I was limiting myself based on what I thought I could have. I never thought I could have whatever it is, you know, a private this or a bigger house or whatever. But then once they just start imagining it, then it's the beginning of them starting to break through that imaginary limiting feeling that they think they have to be in.
Exactly. And what you're doing is you're giving them a way out of something that really, if they looked at up close and in full honesty, they probably wouldn't have wanted to stay there very long anyway. I mean, Abraham kind of lays this out in the next paragraph. It says, you never say, I feel guilty about the abundance of good health that I have been living, so I've decided that I will be sick for the next couple of years in order to allow someone who has been sick the opportunity to use my portion of wellness for himself.
That's true.
Yeah. I mean, you look at it that way, it's like, what? Why would I even consider this?
Yeah, like, okay, now I've been healthy for too long. Now you can be healthy now, so I can't be.
That's right. Yes, only three people in the world can be healthy at the same time. All the rest have to be sick.
No, there's unlimited everything. It's like we put our own limits on it.
We do.
We really do.
And the limits are actually... what really we're trying to overcome. We're trying to overcome the limits we placed on our own beliefs. And we've done a lot of that. We've done that throughout our lives. We have been taught to do it. And we're really good at it. It's just, it's not necessarily a good thing to be really, really good at, because if you get lost in it, it's hard to climb your way out. And that's really what understanding how to be a deliberate creator is all about, is trying to learn how to climb your way out of all those ridiculous limits that you've placed in your own path. And once I know I've placed a bunch of them in my path. I'm still finding them. You know, I know for a fact I haven't found all of them yet. And the way I know that is I'm not happy 100% of the time. I'm happy like 80% of the time. So I found a lot of them, but I haven't found them all yet.
But it is interesting, like, what we tell ourselves. I don't know if you've heard of this lady. She's an Indian lady. She's very well known. They call her Mama.
Okay.
And she goes to different parts of the world, and people line up for hours. And what she does is, because I did it once, so I know, she gives you a hug. And while you're hugging her, she's kind of like taking your hand and going along your back. And she kind of like is supposed to be like a healer, right? The hug. And then what she's doing is, in one hand, she's holding a piece of chocolate, like a Hershey's Kiss or some kind of chocolate.
Mm-hmm.
Then she's channeling into the chocolate what you need to help heal you, okay?
Okay.
And then when you're done hugging her, you thank her. She gives you the chocolate, and then you eat it, and that there's supposed to be, like, healing qualities in the chocolate.
Mm-hmm.
The day I went, it was chocolate. Maybe she doesn't use chocolate all the time, but the day I went, that's what it was.
Okay.
And I thought that's so interesting. Like, normally, when we would eat a piece of candy, we're always told, like, oh, it's so bad for you. You know, don't have it. It's too high in sugar. It's not good for you. But look, in this situation, we were told that the same piece of candy now has healing qualities.
Mm.
I thought to myself, it's so interesting that what we tell ourselves is what we manifest. So, like, if I ate that piece of chocolate, normally I would think, like, oh, I better not have too much of this. It's not good for me. So that's not good, because I'm eating that, putting that energy into my body. It's not good for me.
Mm-hmm.
But yet, just because of that experience, suddenly that same piece of candy is suddenly good for me.
Yeah. Yeah, it's quite a paradox.
Kind of interesting.
It's quite a paradox. It really is. In fact, it ties into one of the next subsections. This is actually a very long chapter. We probably won't finish the whole thing. But one of the next subsections really just ties directly into what you're saying. It does it from sort of the flip side, I should say. It says, if you are not expecting it, you are not allowing it. And, of course, what you were doing with her is, if you're expecting it, you're allowing it.
Exactly, yes.
Now, what they're talking about with the chapter here is, if you're not expecting it, you're not allowing it. It says, remember, each emotion indicates how much energy you are summoning because of your desire, and how much of that summoned energy you are allowing because of the predominant thoughts and beliefs that you currently hold relative to that desire. If you are feeling strong emotion, whether positive or negative, that means that your desire is powerfully focused and you are summoning a great deal of source energy toward your desire. When your strong emotions feel bad, like depression, fear, or anger, that means you are offering resistance to your desire. And when your strong emotions feel good, like passion, enthusiasm, expectation, or love, that means you are offering no resistance to your desire. So, the source energy that you have summoned through your desire is not being challenged vibrationally by you, and you are currently allowing the unfolding of your desire. And that's what you just described.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you described it more from the positive side. They described it a little bit more from the negative side, but it really amounts to the same thing. You believed that the chocolate was going to be healthy for you.
Yes.
You expected it, and therefore you allowed it.
Yes.
Whereas if you had expected that the chocolate was going to be harmful for you, you would have expected, you would have allowed that vibration to come in.
That's
an entirely different vibration.
But it made me think, like, maybe whenever we eat something, we should be eating it thinking, like, wow, this is so good for me. This is healing. This is, you know what I'm saying? Like, why not? You know? I'd rather eat thinking that than, you know, oh, my God, I'm having a piece of something that's not good for me. You know what I mean? It's like, it's just interesting what we tell ourselves.
Yeah, it is interesting what we tell ourselves.
And how it affects us.
The only thing that I would not want to do is to encourage people to try to believe something that they don't really believe in order to justify having something that they believe isn't really good for them. You know what I mean?
Yeah. But it's just an interesting theory to talk about, like, you know.
Absolutely.
What are we telling ourselves all the time?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Why not tell ourselves something more positive to help ourselves?
That's right. It's really an invitation to change the way we think about it rather than to just, you know, eat the food regardless.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, whether it's food or whatever we're doing, like, it's just like, another proof that, you know, it's so important what we tell ourselves.
Because really what it all comes down to there is, do we treat the idea of chocolate in this instance as being healthy, or chocolate as being unhealthy, as being our reality? What we're really talking about is focusing on reality rather than on what we believe. And if you start from the position that chocolate is unhealthy for you, even if you're telling yourself that it's healthy, you're starting from the wrong position, because you're still focused on that reality that's going to contradict chocolate is healthy. Right? So really what we're talking about here is, are you accepting your reality, or are you thinking and manifesting and not manifesting? Are you controlling your thoughts in order to change your thinking about the reality and to change your perception of the reality? Not to justify having the chocolate, but simply to change your perception. That's what the difference is. One is to justify, I want to have the chocolate, so I'm going to talk myself into it. And the other is, I want to change the way I'm thinking about the chocolate. Not the same thing at all. Because actually, you don't have to eat the chocolate in order to change your thought process, right?
Exactly. No, you don't. No.
And you're probably better off not eating the chocolate until you know for a fact that you've got yourself in the right thought process.
Right. But it made me think, too, like, you know, even when you're trying to eat healthy, there's the occasional piece of cake you're going to have, or, like, earlier, the vanilla malted you're going to have. So when you do that, why not enjoy it, you know? Why not enjoy it? Choose that instead of a low vibration, like,
absolutely,
oh, I shouldn't have this, and I'm going to gain weight from it, and why, just like, enjoy it, use it as an, you know.
And if you still have that piece of you that's worried that you're going to gain the weight from it, just don't have very much of it. Doesn't mean you can't enjoy what you're having, just don't have that much of it.
Right, but even if you have one teaspoon, like, enjoy the teaspoon.
Enjoy the teaspoon.
Enjoy it.
Yeah, really get it. Really, really just live it, like, whoa, this is great.
It's interesting, like, even on that level, there's always a choice of how we're thinking about it.
There is. There always is. Interesting side note about people who binge on food or on anything else. You ever notice that the people who binge on it don't really enjoy it?
That's right. Yes.
They're trying so hard just to take so much of it in, they don't take the time to actually enjoy it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, really, I mentioned that steak that we had this past week that was just so juicy and so tasty. When I realized how tasty it was, I actually consciously slowed myself down so that I wasn't eating quickly. I was just taking one bite and just savoring it.
You were because you were fully enjoying it.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. And I'm not even sure I finished the meat, to be honest. I think I decided I just didn't want it anymore. But
yeah, you know, I once saw a Tibetan, a Buddhist monk on TV, and they showed him a meal that they were going to give him. And he said, you know what? If I was home, this meal would pretty much take me the whole day to eat, because he savored every bite and every chew and every little taste, and just fully enjoyed it to that level. I thought, wow, that's amazing.
I mean, if you're somebody who has food issues and you've got this whole struggle about, should I have the chocolate, should I talk myself into the chocolate? Well, if you actually take all of your time to savor everything, you won't be able to eat it all. And now you have a reason to leave it on the plate.
And it is more enjoyable. Like, if I take one piece of chocolate, after seeing that Tibetan monk and how he eats, I just let it melt, and I just, you know, enjoy every little flavor and how good it tastes. And to me, that's much more satisfying than quickly eating, like, the whole bar or something.
I've also gotten very particular about chocolate. Like, for instance, you mentioned Hershey's chocolate. I found Hershey's is actually fairly cheap chocolate. And
it is.
I really don't want to eat that much of it, to be honest.
No.
You know, no. I'd rather have the high-quality chocolate.
I've found there's some, like, Newhouse chocolates are supposed to be very pure.
Okay.
Like, apparently they source for the freshest ingredients and all that kind of thing. And when I've had, like, the higher-end chocolates like that, there's definitely a difference in that. You can tell. There's difference in the taste.
I remember one time many years ago, I had a boss who was from Germany, and this was an IT company, did a lot of software writing and so forth, and I was their server guy. And this guy brought some German chocolate with him from Germany.
I'm sure.
And he gave me a little bite of it. He says, now don't eat it quickly, just, you know, savor it. And so I did, and it's like, oh, jeez, why would anyone want any of the cheaper chocolates after having this one? This, like, goes on and on and on and on from one bite. So yeah, it definitely makes a difference what kind of chocolate you have. No doubt
about
it.
Was that like Scharfenberger or something like that? Or
did you I don't remember. I don't remember what the brand was. Oh, okay. I have no idea. Yeah. All I knew was I wanted another one an hour later.
I'm sure. But it's true with food, like even like to eat a meal slowly and savor each bite, it's just so much more satisfying than just, you know, downing it.
It is.
Just quickly eating.
That's one of the reasons Louise is really picky about making sure our food has a lot of flavor. Because so much of the stuff that you buy in supermarkets has no flavor. I mean, onions exactly. that have no flavor, peppers, for goodness sake, that have no flavor, tomatoes with no flavor, you know, zucchini with no flavor. It's crazy. You know, you have to actually be a careful shopper to find a place that has good quality food that actually is flavorful, you know. And it takes some time.
So how are we going to tie it up? Because we're almost at time.
Yeah, we got 2 minutes left, and I don't think we can really explore too much more of the chapter because you can't do that in 2 minutes. Suffice to say that the chapter kind of touches on some other stuff that people raise as issues, but it's really just the same basic idea. You can't get yourself into freedom by taking away somebody else's freedom. You have to focus simply on your own stuff. And if you do that and you focus on your own joy, you're going to get there. That's really the main message.
Yes. And I think it also has to do with allowing. Just allowing.
Allowing is huge.
How they are.
Yeah.
Yes.
It really is.
Yeah.
Now, before we go, I want to remind people, if you have not yet subscribed to the podcast, please do so. According to our numbers, people who do it are loving it. They are listening to episode after episode, and we're so happy about that. We also want to urge you to share with friends, people you know who are into the law of attraction or are curious about it, because the people who hear the show, they say, wow, I want this to be part of my daily routine. So subscribing is a way to bring it into your routine, and it also gives you a way to tell them, well, here's how you can bring it into your routine. And that's how more and more people get to be part of the LOA community here at LOA Today. Yeah. And David, if they want coaching assistance, how can they reach you?
Oh, you can just go to lifecoachdavid.com. And you can email me or get my phone number through there if you wanted to experience Law of Attraction coaching.
And you know what? I just realized something. We started a little bit late here, so we actually have a little more time than I realized. I'm looking at two different. We got two different clocks here. One clock is, you know, the clock, and the other one is the clock from when we started the show. We actually have about 2 minutes left that we can do beyond what we thought we could do. So, let's pick one more thing to talk about before we run out of time. Okay.
Well, I was going to say that. Some of what we talked about today is also involving allowing. Like when we can really just allow other people to be how they are and not make them wrong, and just allow yourself to be how you are, it's so freeing. It really is.
And the art of allowing is actually one of what Abraham calls the three laws of the universe, the three universal laws.
Mm-hmm.
The first one being the law of attraction. Mm-hmm. The second one being the science of deliberate creation. That's what we're doing when we're trying to control our thoughts. And the third is the art of allowing, which is putting away the resistance.
Yes, and when you really start allowing more, it's just so relaxing. It's so much better. You just feel it. It just feels so much better. You're not taking on that kind of resistance anymore. It's much better.
We should also mention too what allowing is, because I have to admit that was a real big point of confusion for me. And so much of what we need to allow is almost out of our range, so to speak, because we're so used to disallowing it that it's become habitual and we don't even realize we're doing it. It's subconscious and so forth. But what we can do, regardless of whether we're in touch with what we're disallowing, is to focus on feeling good. Because as it turns out, you can't put up resistance when you're feeling love. You can't put up resistance when
you're
appreciating.
You can't do both at the same time.
You can't both at the same time. So really the goal is just to feel love, to feel appreciation, to feel gratitude, to feel happiness, to feel joy. And whenever we're feeling those states, we are in a state of allowing. We are not resisting. So that's really the best thing to remember.
And it does feel so much better when you can really say, oh, I'm so thankful for this, or I'm so appreciative for that. And
absolutely.
I just feel so good because of this or for that. It just feels so much better to be in that kind of way than the other way.
And it feels a good way to end the show, too. David, it's been a pleasure as usual. Can't wait to do it again next week.
Yes, have a wonderful week, everybody.
Thank you. And please join us, if you're listeners, during our daily podcast Monday through Friday, twice a day. And we'll see you next time here on LOA Today. Goodbye, everybody.
Bye.